You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Joe and Cordy Atkinson have spent nearly 40 years training one of nature's most dangerous aerial assassins, the Golden Eagle. If you are a fan of programs on PBS or National Geographic, chances are the face of one of their eagles has graced your TV screen. The couple specializes in rehabilitating these mighty birds, teaching them critical survival skills before releasing them back into the wild. Their work with raptors has taken them across the globe, from North America to Southeast Asia, to train one of the world's rarest birds of prey. Now, along the way, they have found new opportunities to educate and to contribute to local and global conservation efforts. And the dynamic duo themselves, Joe and Cordy, they are joining me live in studio. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How in the world did you get involved in something like this?
Well, I think Cordy got involved with it because I drug her into it. I grew up on ranches and just found birds and figured out how to keep them alive and figured out how to get them to come back to me, which is actually the key to the whole thing.
And Cordy, after getting drug into it, what is your mission? What is your goal in doing what you do?
Well, what everything has evolved into is over decades, we have observed golden eagles, obviously, and there are a specific group of young golden eagles that may end up in a rehabilitation for various reasons. Bottom line is they've become separated from their parents at this young age. Maybe they've just left the nest. And people have this misconception that, okay, once they leave the nest, they can fly, they're good. But like with so many animals, they need a very critical time period to follow their parents and learn actual survival skills. They need to learn how to soar, to catch a thermal, because golden eagles need to cover vast distances to find prey. And the parents allow them to learn all of this and are still feeding them, which is the key. They don't have the pressure of having to find food. So what we do is kind of become surrogate parents for these young birds. And through the sport of falconry, we train them only to the extent of they will come back to us. Mm. And we allow them that opportunity to learn those skills while we are still feeding them. So they don't have that pressure.
So are you called on, like, wherever there might be, like, golden eagles, as you just described, or does everything happen locally? How does this process
work? Well, we work with several rehab centers in California, Oregon. And what happens is when a young eagle comes in that fits the criteria, not every eagle needs to be flown by a falconer. A two-year-old bird, for example, knows how to hunt, knows how to do all those things. So once it's deemed healthy, it can be turned loose and it's good to go. We're talking about birds, like Cordy said, that have no skills. They're an absolute blank slate. And so to turn them loose, it's really a death sentence because, yeah, they could get lucky and find something to eat, but they're not going to make it because they need the ability to practice the skills. Mm. And so what happens is, now Cordy and I can't fly and train every single eagle that comes into rehabs. So we have a group of falconers in four states that we've put together and trained in a technique that allow these birds to get back in the wild.
How critical is it with golden eagles to teach them these skills like you're doing and to be able to release them back into the wild?
Extremely critical. And we have documented that. We have put tracking on birds that were released in a manner that did not follow our protocol, and I'm not trying to promote our specific protocol, but the method in which we train them and give them these opportunities. We have put tracking on birds that have, for example, been released in habitat that's not conducive to golden eagles or that have had no opportunity to fly other than in a large flight chamber, and they have been found starved to death.
It's really a new concept in the sense that typically rehab centers, and certainly they're trying to do the best they can do for these eagles. But we now know that taking a young eagle, putting it in a large flight pen, maybe feeding it some live natural prey, and then turning it loose, for this group of eagles, that doesn't work because they don't know what to do when they get out. And so without having those birds previously been tracked with telemetry and everything, nobody knew. It was, oh, it's a great release. We're all happy and everything.
But you actually don't know the result.
We don't, right. But now we do. See, and so the birds are literally starving to death.
Oh.
Because they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So you've gotten involved, as I mentioned, in television documentaries. Mm-hmm. How did that all come to be?
well, what happened? See, with a lot of the programs that we've worked for, they want a hunting predation scene of an eagle like chasing its natural prey. Well, you could spend years in the field trying to get that on film. It's almost nearly impossible.
Right.
So what they do is somewhere along the line, somebody found us years ago and said, hey, can we film one of your eagles? Now, to be perfectly honest, you cannot get paid with natural wildlife, with native wildlife. So all of the work we've done, we don't get paid for. It's all free because the laws state that. So what happened was they realized that we had a trained bird that would pursue these animals, particularly jackrabbits.
And then come back to
And come back, and they could do it multiple times. Different takes, all of these things, and that just grew.
Yeah, and they could even, set up certain scenes to a certain extent.
Right.
Yeah.
How fascinating.
Yeah.
So is it true in 2015 you were asked to train, I hope I'm saying this right, two Philippine eagles, and these are endangered species.
It's the rarest eagle in the
world.
Yes.
Okay, so talk to me about this project.
Well, the Philippine eagle, formerly known as the monkey-eating eagle, is a massive bird. If you know anything about birds of prey, if you took a golden eagle and set it next to a red tail, there's quite a bit of difference in size. Well, that would be if you put a monkey-eating eagle or Philippine eagle next to a golden eagle. The Philippine eagle is that much bigger.
Did it really eat monkeys?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And the thing is, when you're asked to train a bird like that, training golden eagles, golden eagles eat jackrabbits and squirrels and stuff, and they do eat some bigger prey. But that's a whole different. They don't look at you like.
Well, that's a snack for this eagle.
Yeah. They don't look at you like, well, I could eat you.
And they hunt primates, so what are we? We're just a larger primate.
And it looked at me like, hey, you're just bigger than what I would normally eat, which is a weird thing to deal with. It's like literally training a velociraptor.
Wow.
Because they're very intelligent, and they have blue eyes, and it just stares into your soul.
Yeah, they look like
it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So were you able to... Yeah. To train them and get them back out into the wild?
Well,
no, this was not for a release back to the wild. This was for a documentary that was produced by Cornell Lab of Ornithology because, like we said, this is a critically endangered species. Mm. And they produced a documentary to raise awareness about this bird worldwide. This bird only exists in the Philippines. There's not one bird that has ever been allowed out of the Philippines. So not many people even know what it is. And so, this film has been finished. It has won many awards at film festivals.
It's called Bird of Prey.
Bird of Prey.
Okay. Yeah, it's really cool.
But it's not technically released to the public yet. It's just being shown at film festivals. It's absolutely stunning. But so that, again... Neil Rettig, who was the primary cinematographer of the film, there were certain scenes that he could not get in the wild. Mm. First of all, you're dealing with a bird in the jungle, and there were just some specific behaviors that he wanted to be able to film. And so by training two of them, and we did have to take them out into the jungle itself.
And there's only two types of cobras out there, so it wasn't that bad.
Oh, well, yeah.
That
bird wanted to eat you, so what was the cobra to it?
Like all projects we've worked on, they don't want any equipment on them. So the most dangerous thing about a raptor is its feet. Mm-hmm. They can bite, and the Philippine eagle is fully capable of biting off your nose, your ear. It's a massive bird. But then they want to have no equipment on its feet. So you have a bird that kills things with its feet, and I have no way to control this eagle, and it's hungry, and it's looking for something to eat.
And it better not be your nose.
And it better not be. And I tell you what, the first time we flew the male, it left the perch, and it took off through the jungle, knifing, and it's going, Cordy's calling it. And I'm thinking, if it goes after her, there's no way I can get there faster.
Yeah.
So I was just I didn't hear any screams. And then our daughter radioed me, it's okay.
But after your time there, Cordy, you actually ended up starting a nonprofit.
I did. I was so impressed and taken by these birds. And the Philippine Eagle Foundation there has this amazing program called the Forest Watchers. And what they do is they reach out to tribal leaders in the indigenous villages and asked them, if there was one service that could be provided for your village, what would it be? And some have said, you know, like a schoolhouse for their children or a medical clinic. So the foundation raises funds to provide that service, and in return, they train the villagers to be forest watchers. They actually watch the, you know, that people don't cut down trees.
They deputize them.
They do deputize them, and they're official. And they watch out for whatever wild bird happens to be in their area. Mm. And it's been extremely successful. And it and in the process, they also teach villagers sustainable farming practices and provide trees for them to replant.
Wow.
So it's very, all three are very linked, you know, the indigenous people, the forest, and these birds. So anything within this program helps all three. And I was just so, I thought that was so amazing and so important that when I came home, I started the CMA fund to raise funds specifically for that program. I mean, you can always raise funds and send it to the foundation, you know, with a just a blanket open slate. But I wanted to raise money specifically for that program. So that's what I'm doing.
And very quickly, before we wrap up, I know you live right across the border in Eastern Oregon, but some of the things you've done is you've gone to the Snake River Correctional Institute in Ontario and given educational courses, and you teach other educational courses. Is this, so is this, can people find you? And if they want to learn more?
Absolutely. Yeah. And our emphasis is raising awareness about lead, because lead poisoning is a huge issue in raptors and specifically golden eagles. So, yes, absolutely.
If they just Google my name, Joe Atkinson, they'll be able to get a touch.
Yeah.
All right. I think what you do is, this is fascinating.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming in today and talking more about this. My guests today have been Joe and Cordy Atkinson. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.